Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man.
Hey, girl.
It's creepier by the day.
It already had the creepy meter
pinned. I know,
pinned,
it's, just,
so.
But it's like some days it just feels creepier than others. I don't know why.
Yeah. I had a phone conversation today with the Chicago Bears.
And get out.
They were very, very nice, very, very cordial, very, very friendly.
What did you expect them to do?
Well, I didn't know how mad they would be about. Look, I made a stink out of yesterday being on the Zoom call, going out of my way.
You did pitch a bit of a fit.
Yeah, and
kicking, screaming,
and they assured me. Even though you said they intentionally did not want to go to me, is they weren't trying to, quote, screw with me.
I can't prove. Okay. Well, I take them for their word because, you know, the people that you talk to, I have a fondness for.
I still want to ask the question. And then I invited, of course, I said, hey, why doesn't Matt come on just for that question? We can do a whole bit where Matt comes on, Matt Nagy, and it's our own personal Zoom call. We don't have to have him for 15 minutes. We could just ask him the question, then he could hang up afterwards.
I don't think they do bits up there.
Yeah, they don't do bits. That's what I was told. Yeah. We don't do bits.
Is that what he said? We don't do bits?
We don't do bits. Yeah. We do football. We try to do football. So
my hope is at some point they are going to provide access for you and whoever else wants to be up there in one of those large gatherings. I shiver at using the term because it just makes me itchy and scratchy, but a large gathering of reporters asking questions in person.
It was brought to my attention how tough it is on everybody, how it's not ideal with the Zoom, and how they do. And it was basically what we rationalized then when we were just, calm about it, is that they wanted to take care of the guys who are there every day, the people
sense.
Who are there every day,
and I don't
the
think
regulars.
And I don't think you had a problem with that. I don't think anybody should have a problem with that.
I was standing there with my hand up, and I wanted to, even at the end, take care of the normal beat guys. So they have assured me, Adal, the plan is on for next Tuesday, as you mentioned. I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They have told me I will have an opportunity to ask my Andy Dalton question.
Okay, so you've submitted the question,
well,
what the question
know,
is.
Now they could
switch it up. Switch it up.
I should, like,
switch
come
it up.
Out. Yeah.
But
I
do so want to know. They're going to prep Matt before you get to your question.
Well, I'm going to have a follow-up, too. That's
He'll
what I learned
fun.
From these Zoom calls.
You
is they don't know
two,
what the follow-up
is. Don't you have to get, you get in the back of the line, though,
Matt,
don't
no, you? No, uh-uh. You have to ask two questions.
Right. Matt, I hope you're well. I have a follow-up question after this. That's the way the reporters have been doing it, so they don't get cut off. And so I won't hang up and listen for my answer. Mm-hmm. I will establish that I have two questions. But I do want to know. I do. Does Justin Fields have a chance to win the job, or has this job been promised to Andy Dalton? And if they did, why?
I think it's a good question.
Whether they prep for that or not and they talk around it and they don't answer, that's their prerogative. But I told the Bears, the person that I was talking to with the Bears, someone who I admire a great deal.
Staley?
I was talking to Staley the Bear. I am not looking for any gotcha type. I legitimately, as a Bears fan.
You want to know if there's a chance that Justin Fields could be under center to start the season?
Well, I want to know if the reason that he's not is because they promised Andy Dalton the job. That's the thing.
Okay.
I just want to know, like, is this a fair fight or is this an unfair fight? Could Justin Fields prove that he's ready like Russell Wilson did? But unlike Pete Carroll in Seattle, they didn't promise Matt Flynn a thing. Is there some word by, you have my word, that you will be the starter on opening day?
How about this? How about it doesn't go great in the first quarter and then in the second quarter, is it possible Justin Fields could come in? Or could you circumvent all of this by giving Andy Dalton the start in week one and then go to Justin Fields in week two?
You could do all of that, but again, it's all for the wrong reasons. That's the point, and you've agreed with me on this.
I don't know why. Again, if it was the Waddle football team, I am not making, and this is not a shot at Andy Dalton, who's had a nice career in the National Football League. He's not at the stage of his career nor is he at the accomplishment level where you give someone like Andy the guarantee that he is going to be the starter, because so many things can happen between the time when you sign him and when you kick the ball off for the opening game of the season, especially if you're a team that is still in the market for a long-term answer at the quarterback position.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I would say to Andy, Andy, this is not a shot at you. If this is part of the negotiation, then you know this is where it is. I'm going to give you a one-year deal for $10 million. It's very likely that you'll be the starting quarterback, but you know that we're going to we have you rated ahead of Nick Foles. Nick's still on the roster, but if it's you and Nick, there's a really good chance that you'll be under center in week one, but I can't guarantee you anything because you know that things change drastically.
Things change, yeah.
And we're in the market for a young quarterback.
Right.
I don't know how things are going to unfold on draft night.
A lot could play out.
So we want you. Flip wants you.
We believe in you.
Your Laser wants you.
Laser was a coordinator for you in Cincy.
We feel good about the...
$10 million.
Here's $10 million.
We don't have any cap room. We're giving you $10 million.
Right. So we feel... But I can't guarantee you that it's your job in week one or through the course of the season. That, to me, is not an unreasonable way to run your football team.
I think promises in sports are stupid. 312-332-3776. I was just talking to somebody at the golf outing. We were going through the Garpack stuff. Do you remember Chandler Hutchison?
Yeah.
Remember that? Remember, they wanted Chandler Hutchison 6 weeks before the draft to stop working out, and they promised him that he would get drafted at that second first-round pick. Why? You stopped your process of interviewing other guys, seeing who else could leap up the draft board. You made a stupid promise, and of course it didn't work out with Chandler Hutchison. They traded him this year.
Well, if I'm Chandler Hutchison, I'm not going to stop working out for other teams because maybe somebody drafts me higher than even where the Bulls
did.
I know.
He agreed. That was the promise. And Weeder and I were texting about this, and Dan is in disagreement with me. Dan's like, Sylvie, why are you so into this? And it's sort of like how he was mad at the Bears last week in the defense, it's like that's the mark of a 9-8 football team, you know, and Pastor's an 8-8 football team on his thing. And it didn't get me all hot and bothered. And I said, look, this to me is exactly why the Bears have been where they are, that they rule out the possibility of even interviewing Deshaun Watson. We like Mahomes. We like Trubisky. We're not working out Watson. We're not interviewing Watson. We are drawing a line there. Why? It does you no good. Just like when you go to Andy Dalton, it does you no good to promise when you have all this information that could happen between June, July, August, and opening day. And it's the essence of running the process the wrong way, and it's why the Bears have gotten into this position in these past years, and they've not been able to solidify the quarterback position.
We'll find out when you ask him the question. I don't know that is exactly what transpired. We've got some whispers that may have happened, but we'll find that out.
Pro Football Talk reported that they have someone who is familiar with the situation that indeed the promise was made. And there are reports out there. So it's their opportunity to say, no, why would we ever promise anyone the starting job? Do it. Like that's all I want. I want to know that my football team is not in the promise business.
At the end of the day, do I think it will be the difference between them winning the Super Bowl and not? No, but I agree. It's a matter of how you do business that ultimately could lead to bigger issues.
It's the low-level stuff that you shouldn't be getting into.
To me, it doesn't. It's one thing. That's stepping on your own foot right there. To me, other than Andy's not going to sign with you, if in fact you don't promise, well, then at that point, I would say, you know, we'll roll with Nick. I would have rolled with Nick anyway at the time. But
again, this is why, like, yes, Justin Fields has made me feel good about being a Bears fan again.
Because did you hear about that deep ball he threw yesterday?
Yeah, oh yeah. Darnell Mooney talked about it. We got that audio.
You're still sweating about that.
I do. I love it. It changed the whole, like you said, if you want the narrative change the narrative.
Amen.
And they found a way to get Fields. So I'm optimistic now. But like, I would like to have a sit-down conversation with Matt Nagy and ask him, Matt, again, process, okay? A year ago, you had a chance to get Andy Dalton for low money on a free agent deal. Instead, you chose to trade for Nick Foles on a high price deal. Now you have both, and now it's switched in a matter of a year. Why? Well, all your processes are flawed. Why do you always go for the higher-priced guy and then say, well, we screwed that one up. Let's do it now the opposite. And now you had to rush to go get Andy Dalton and possibly promise him thing. A year ago, you could have had Dalton for free. Just money. But you chose to give up a fourth-round pick and commit 3 years' salary to Nick Foles, and there are rumors that they're going to deal him, and you chose that route. Now, a year later, you have Nick Foles in the building, and he's third string. Why?
This is how we do business, Mark.
Well, I don't understand this. That's not real good preparation. That's not a good process. It's not a good way to handle the salary cap.
While you're at it, ask them also why they drafted Kevin White.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to say, the list is long.
Yeah, I know that. I know. But, like, there are some things that just don't make sense common sense-wise.
Kevin White's one of them.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we could get into a bunch of stuff, the process.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, like...
Well, Sylvie, to answer your questions about all these different decisions, the Bears draft Justin Fields, which is fantastic, a great move by Ryan Pace to move up and get him. He's still a bad GM.
Right.
To answer a lot of these questions, yeah, he can still be bad at doing this job, but he did find the one guy who we think is going to turn into a star quarterback.
Hey, listen,
don't make a lot of sense.
But going forward, if Justin Fields works out and Tevin Jenkins becomes a stalwart at left tackle,
fantastic,
and Mooney becomes a difference maker, then he changes the narrative. He's got an opportunity to do something that a lot of guys don't get that opportunity because the Bears front office likes him. So they're giving him an opportunity to actually make good on some of the mistakes that he has made. It's the simple, and you already said it, it's the simple message that makes me sound like an idiot, but I am an idiot. You change the narrative by changing the narrative. They have given him the opportunity to change the narrative. The narrative will change if Justin Fields becomes a Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes type player. If Tevin Jenkins becomes a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle. If Cole Kmet continues to develop and Mooney's a guy they have a chance to change the way the entire NFL, including the Bears fan base, feels about them.
He could have this job for another decade if all these moves turns out.
Absolutely.
If Justin Fields is a stud, Ryan Pace could be your general manager for a while. I just want them to get some of these processes, the basic stuff. You know, you could have a bad process that results in a good result, or you could have a really good process that turns out bad. I'd just rather have a good process through, you know, think it out the right way.
I'm with you. I'd rather have the process and knowing that over the course of an extended period of time, there will be things that go wrong. But there are things at times where you go, I still am okay with the decision I made because I followed the correct steps or the most logical steps to get to the conclusion I got to.
Like, I always use Quintana as an example. The Quintana move didn't work out. It was a good process. They said to themselves, here's this guy who's at least a number two with the White Sox.
Yep.
He is a cost-controlled guy.
For a couple years.
We have guys who are blocking Eloy, and we're good. We're acquiring another pitcher. We're good on pitching. We need to continue to win World Series. We're in go-for-it mode. And the deal worked out poorly, but I thought the thinking that went into it was a good one.
Well, it wasn't just for that year. Remember, Quintana, as you said, was cost control for an extended period of time. It was like going out there and also spending money on a free agent pitcher in. Like, they were able to do more because of that, the decision they made.
Because Quintana was cost-controlled, they signed Darvish the following year.
Right. And then they traded him.
Yeah, then that's a bad process. Like, what are you doing? So, 312-332-3776. And just to reset this, I am in no means saying that Justin Fields has to start. There are many reasons that I'm cool with them saying he's not starting. I am not cool with them saying he doesn't start because of a promise. All the other reasons are valid. Start Andy Dalton for a variety of reasons, not because you made a promise in April. 332-3776. Could Nick Foles be on the move?
What?
And also, Justin Fields did sign today. I'll tell you why this shouldn't just be accepted as a layup and why this was great news today. All that coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie are with you as you return to the office, just like that annoying coworker that always talks about their cat. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Got some good stuff on Justin Fields signing. Nick Foles could be on the move. Welcome to everyone on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. That's our channel. Make sure you follow us there as well. You can watch the show every day inside the First Midwest Bank studio. Brought to you by DraftKings, a Casino Queen sports book. Use promo code WMVP. And Roderick brings up a few points. Another reason why I love Twitch is not only it adds a component where you can watch the show, but you interact with listeners. And just like Twitter that I love, listeners can react and engage with the show in that regard. You can always do so on the phone as well, 332-3776. Roderick's a huge, long streamer. He is a guy who listens to the show. I like him. And he said, the Bengals were still trying to trade Dalton when the Bears traded for Foles. I think there's a decent amount of revisionist history surrounding the last acquisition of Foles. It was a bad move because it didn't work, but Dalton wasn't exactly available when they made their move, and they traded for Foles literally the week everything shut down. Coaching staff knew Foles, so that's who they were most comfortable with. And this has always been my point about Ryan Pace. I get all of that. I get all of it. You don't rush to make a trade for Nick Foles. You don't rush to give Andy Dalton $10 million. You don't rush to trade up from 3-2 to draft Mitch Trubisky. Premium prices because you have expedited something that doesn't need to be expedited. It is like waiting in a long line for an iPhone 5. No one in their right mind would go to the Apple store right now and wait in a 3-hour line and overpay for the iPhone 5. It's just mediocrity. If you get something that's so awesome, like they had with Justin Fields, you trade it up for him.
They let the draft come to them this year.
Yes. And, like, that's always been my problem with Ryan Pace is, no, you didn't have – if you missed out on Andy Dalton, too bad, so sad. There's going to be another guy you find who could be available, you know?
Well, you're looking for a placeholder anyway.
Yeah.
You weren't looking for the future.
Yes. And, again, last year you didn't have to rush to give up a fourth-round pick and – you know, sign and get Nick Foles for $21 million committed, you know? $21 million he was signed for.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
I mean, Andy Dalton's $10 million contract for a team that has cap issues.
Right. So that's always been my issue with the Bears. And look, go for it with the premium guys. Khalil Mack, go for it. I love that. I love the move from Ryan Pace on that. I'll never regret that. It's overpaying and being a rush for just replacement level players.
Yeah.
That aren't Super
Bowl. That's true. But there is an outcome element to it, but life is based on outcomes.
Right. And that's how we judge general managers.
If Nick Foles would have stepped in and been really good, we wouldn't have said anything. But he wasn't.
We never say a win or a loss is outcome biased or in hindsight. We judge teams based on their win loss record.
That is correct.
Same thing with draft picks and trades. Ryan and Gurney, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Rye?
Hey, guys. I'm old school, but, you know, I'd not only start Dalton, but I'd glue Fields to the bench. And, you know, my thought process is if you look at the three top quarterbacks in the league, you know, Tom Brady, he sat for at least a year and a half. Aaron Rodgers, you know, he sat for, you know, three seasons. Mahomes, he sat for a full year. And from there, you know, I don't think that Russell Wilson's a good example because Matt Flynn, he really didn't have starts, whereas Mahomes, again, sat behind Alex Smith. Dak would have sat behind Romo. And Dalton can do this. So I appreciate you taking my call. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, look, everybody's opinion is meaningful. I just don't share it. I don't come into this season with a set requirement. If Andy Dalton starts because Justin Fields isn't ready, great. If Andy Dalton doesn't start because Justin Fields is ready to go and has proven that the moment isn't too big for him, great. Like, I don't come in with any preconceived notion that one way is more right than the other. The situation will dictate what the right decision is. That's why these guys have been hired. They've got to determine if Justin Fields is ready to go. If you just arbitrarily decide that, no, we're not going to start Justin, but Justin is really ready to go,
right,
then
that's bad.
I just don't understand your theory. I just wouldn't. I would do things differently.
Right.
Is it the worst thing in the world for Justin Fields to sit and watch? No.
And Tom Brady was drafted in the sixth round, and no one expected him to ever be ready. You know, and they had Drew Bledsoe. Alex Smith already was winning a lot of games with the Chiefs.
The game has changed. The game has changed, too. And guys play more. They play sooner these days. So, I mean, look, we'll find out.
If he's not ready, sit him. I want Justin Fields to be a star.
Right.
And I want him to be ready when he plays. I don't want him getting screwed up. But if he is ready, that's a different
story. Look, that's my theory on quarterbacks in general. That's why I had these arguments with people coming out of training camp in 2017. And people yelling at me, oh, Mitch is better than Glennon. I don't care. Mitch isn't ready to play. This isn't a Glennon issue. This is a Mitch issue.
Right, right.
Did you see, based on what you saw from Mitch, was Mitch ready to go in 2017? He came from an environment where he played 13 games in his collegiate career. Pretty much every place was sent from the sideline in through pictures and hand gestures. Never came in and out of huddles. You could tell by watching him work that he wasn't ready to go. So, look, I mean, that's the biggest issue to me. Nick Foles. Abdallah, you told this yesterday. Who was the person on ESPN that was suggesting that Nick Foles may, in fact, be heading somewhere?
So Jeremy Fowler, reporter for ESPN, wrote on ESPN.com the five factors that have ramped up high-profile player movement, you know, with like Aaron Rodgers,
right,
and Deshaun Watson, and all these players now that want out. Allen Robinson supposedly requested a trade last year. So all of these guys now, it's easier. He cites, you know, the cap going up, and teams can, it's easier to cut these guys if you want to or move them if you want to. Also player empowerment and how this is becoming more like the NBA, where players can just say, you know what, I don't want to play for you anymore, I'm out. And then he goes into the 10 players that could be moved sooner rather than later. And there are two Chicago Bears on the list. Not one, but two. The first one, the obvious one, is Nick Foles. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's the third-string quarterback right now. This is what Jeremy Fowler says about him. Paying a third-string quarterback $4 million in guarantees is tough for the cash-strapped Bears. And there's a clear connection to the New York Jets. GM Joe Douglas was with Foles in Philly. The Jets have zero NFL experience in their quarterback room. It's uncertain whether Foles actually wants to go to New York. But don't be surprised if New York looks into this one.
That's not a bad thought. Like, he'd be the perfect guy to tutor their guy. And they have no backup right now?
What does it do for you? Yeah, they don't have anybody, really. They have the kid from BYU starting, and outside of that, I don't think they really have anything. What will the difference be between keeping Nick, cutting Nick, trading Nick?
I think you save, if I'm not mistaken, you save like $5 to $7 million. I have to look it up. But
If
you trade him. But the problem is people will say, oh, but it's such a great cap. You need money. Like, you're going to have to pay him regardless.
Right.
So you either pay less to get rid of him, or you pay him to sit there and literally do nothing.
Correct. You will probably get a conditional seventh-round pick, right?
Yes, you're not going to
get that's fine, but you need the cap space.
Right.
You have no
little
money.
Cap space that he could provide.
Can you guess the other Chicago
Bears? Yes, I can, because you told us this yesterday.
I did?
And it makes
sense.
Remember him. Is
really?
It Akeem Hicks? I remember his name coming up.
It is Akeem Hicks. Here's what Jeremy Fowler says. Chicago has allowed Akeem Hicks and agent Drew Rosenhaus to gauge trade interest. As the Chicago Tribune reported in March, there have been no recent developments here for now. He's still a Bear. Some teams believe Hicks is a top five interior disruptor. Here's the problem. At his age, that could prevent them from giving up draft capital and signing him to a new deal. Hicks is a 2022 free agent and is due a total of $10.5 million this year. Here's the key part here. This could heat up closer to training camp.
Sure.
None of the big defensive guys, pun intended, have been there for the OTAs right now. So we'll see during the veteran mini camp if he shows up during the mandatory training camp, or is he still looking for a trade right now? This could, again, it's money versus money spent for him to play versus money spent to get rid of him and saving some cap room.
Yeah, I don't know where they're, like, I know they signed Justin Fields, but I think there's still some more stuff that needs to happen before they can sign everybody.
Well, haven't signed Tevin Jenkins
yet. Right, and you also have to create some space that when you go into the season, for whatever reason, you've got some leeway there, that you've got some extra cap flexibility.
OverTheCap.com has a little calculator that you can decide to do things. So for Nick Foles, I did the trade option. And it looks like the Bears would be on the hook for about $5.3 million if they traded him.
How about if they...
What's the savings, like, to this year's cap if they traded him? Well, like, they would have to pay the 5.3, or that would work against
their
cap. So his
cap number on the team is 6.6 mil.
So we're talking like a
million bucks.
And then and next year, some more possibly? Because he signed for 3 years, I believe. I mean, 2 more years now.
Listen, if you could get a conditional seventh and save $1 million, you make the move.
Yeah.
It's not breaking the bank, but
you're going to pay him regardless.
Yes.
Right.
And to point out, they could have, one of the options on this calculator is a trade before June 1, which the Bears didn't do that. They would have been on the hook for about $11.6 million.
Yeah.
So like the most likely option would be a trade now, but you're only... You know, you're saving about $1 million is basically all of it. You're still on the hook for 5.6.
Yep. 3-3-2-3-7-7-6. We didn't talk about the Fields signing. I did hear something on Crosstalk that surprised me about the Fields signing. I want to relay that. There's lots of baseball coming up, too. Sox and Blue Jays, we've got the game tonight at 6:30. Huge Cubs series for many different reasons coming up this weekend. And baseball issues all next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
As always, I love Crosstalk. Crosstalk Unhinged as well. That is available on the ESPN Chicago app. It's on the Waddle and Sylvie page. It's on the Carmen and Yurko page. We dropped a new episode yesterday. So make sure when you have some time, download that. The reviews continue to be strong. People love what they hear. Commercial free, uncensored. Hear Waddle and Sylvie and Carmen and Yurko unlike any other time on the air. That's for sure. Carmen was going after me today. We'll get to that later. But I heard Carmen, Yurko, Cap, and Hoodie Crosstalk today. Towards the end, they played the breaking news sounder.
Did you hear
that too? And they were debating like whether or not that was news that Justin Fields had signed his deal, right? What was it, like an $11 million signing bonus? It's basically, for those who aren't aware of the way the rookie contracts are these days, they're basically slotted in there where, you know, the 11th pick usually gets somewhere between the 10th and the 12th. And there's a cap on what you can pay a rookie. Yeah. I mean, they used to, back in the day, the highest paid players in the NFL used to be rookies who were unproven.
They changed the rule or the structure after Sam Bradford was the first overall pick as a quarterback.
Yeah.
The following year, they changed everything so that, like you mentioned, Sam Bradford signs a deal and he's the highest paid player on his team. He's never taken a snap. That doesn't occur anymore.
Like every Bears team I covered back in the day would have a holdout just because no one reported to camp on time because their deals weren't done because there were so many millions of dollars to work out. David Terrell was a holdout. Yeah. Curtis Enos was a holdout.
There was no slotting that took place.
No, right. I think Cade McNown was a holdout.
Wish he would have held out.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
But remember, he puked in a UCLA game, and they took a picture of that and put it on the Sports Illustrated cover, and he was forever glorified as a grinder, a gamer, you know? And, he may be small, and he may be a jerk, but he's a gamer.
I like the puke and rally mentality. Like, I probably would have felt better about him if I was not watching him play football, but he was in a local establishment and puked and got right back into his bar stool.
Al Michaels always talks about him, that he's a good guy now, supposedly.
At the golf course.
Yeah.
Golf with
him. The Justin Fields signing, in my book, is still important. It is still breaking news. It is still something that I go, okay, that's good. This is a good thing. While many players don't hold out now, Roquan Smith did. It was just a few years ago we were doing the Roquan for different reasons on what you can find. Some other players have held out.
And one of the Bosa kids did, but it's not very frequent.
It's not very frequent, but some guys who thought they were a higher ranked guy and they get drafted later say, well, I was drafted 11th, but I should get like the fifth overall pick money because I was rated higher by a lot more people. You know, I'm not saying that Justin Fields was playing that game, but to me, it's just great to hear the early, it doesn't mean anything in the big, big picture, but in the here and now, it's good to know that Justin Fields, there will be no drama. He's here. He's ready to work. He's signed. And there's, it's officially
in my good thing column, but I got to be honest with you. There was never a thought that Justin Fields wouldn't be here because of that. It happens so infrequently in today's game.
But it happened with your player. It happened with your first-round pick was drafted around.
And it was unusual.
Where Justin Fields was. So, I think it's news, and I think it's good. Again.
I think it's good, too. I think when they sign Tevin Jenkins, that'll be good, too.
It will be good. I don't want to hold out.
I'll give you something else that I thought was good. This is from an article written by Johns about some OTA notebook issues, okay? And this is, you know, I have felt more adamant about this young offensive group being at OTAs more than the grizzled veteran defensive players. I always went to OTAs because my job was always on the line. I liked being around my guys. I thought it was the best place for me to get equipped and ready to play. That was my personal belief. Other guys feel differently, but I do feel strong based on this offense that has struggled over the last 3 years in this system. You've got new faces. You've got two new quarterbacks. You got a young tight end. You got a couple of young receivers. I thought it was more important for this offense to be at these voluntary workouts than the defense. And Cole Kmetz references a point that I kind of overlooked and I thought is a very good point. He said, I think what I've noticed not having them last year, meaning OTAs, and having them this year is being able to get timing and kind of cohesion with Andy and the quarterbacks, Kmetz said. Things as simple as cadence and how they articulate in the huddle and what they're seeing and the timing of the throws and the routes are huge. Those are all things that I think have been really beneficial. And I think that's a really good point by a young player. Again, Khalil Mack may not be meaningful for him to be at an OTA. But Cole Kmetz and Darnell Mooney, two guys that really didn't have this experience last year because of the pandemic, and they were rookies, are now in there working with two new quarterbacks.
Right, yeah.
I'm glad to see the turnout. Yes, the turnout has been very, very good for the most part with regard to the offensive players being there. They need to be there because they haven't lived up to their expectation over the last three seasons.
Why? I don't know if you've seen this. So your guy, Shanny, canceled San Francisco's mini camp. Their mandatory mini camp has been canceled with a guy they just drafted, rookie quarterback. David Culley, the new coach of Houston, just canceled the mandatory mini camp. This is a team that has so many new players.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's an absolute, why are these teams canceling mandatory mini camps? After now that more and more guys are getting vaccinated, why is it a bad thing
to have
your guys show up?
I'd have to look into what they're doing more so. Usually these things are used as bargaining chips. Maybe they're allowing this to go away for something else. I don't know. Again, if I'm more interested in this team's offensive work than I am anything. Like, the more this group can be together in person, on the grass, in the classroom versus just Zoom meetings for this offense, the better. You're not Justin Fields. If you want Justin Fields to be your starting quarterback, anybody out there on opening game of the 2021 season, I can personally guarantee you there's a better chance of that happening if he is at the building more than less.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, that's just really simple.
Common sense again. Here's Darnell Mooney. This was yesterday. He met with reporters on Zoom talking about Justin Fields' deep ball and how happy he is that he's in camp.
It's a beautiful ball, man. He knows where he wants to put it, and it's very accurate. And sometimes if it can get there at the right ball, but he wants it out in front of you, and he'll get frustrated with himself if it's not there. But he's very tough on himself. He's a great player, great person as well, and he's going to have a good career.
Darnell, just to follow up on that question, one of the things that folks lauded about Justin coming out was that he could throw the deep ball in a way that allowed speedsters to use their speed and go chase it down. I'm curious, as a speedster, what your early experiences have been in that regard.
I've caught one or two deep balls from him, and the very first one that he threw up to me, I was smiling mid-route of just seeing the ball in the air and just where it was placed. And like I said, man, he's very accurate with his ball, and he understands where exactly where he wants the ball.
That's good. Good riddance, Mitch. Is that what he was thinking? Yeah, did I hear him say that? Or was that me? Was that in my brain or his brain?
Did the sometimes I heard a Cap and Hoodie talk about this. I don't see the hard copies anymore. I read everything online. Did the Sun-Times really do a big thing today on Mitch in Buffalo?
I saw some tweets. Someone wrote something about it. Yeah, that is a thing.
He's tearing it up in OTAs.
Good luck to you.
Dude, do you remember how many times, though, he said, I was ripping that ball in practice, and then the game happened, and he couldn't rip the ball, and he overthrew him? Like, who cares about what he, like, you know?
This is why I say you got to tap the brakes on all OTA conversations.
Yeah. As we're moving forward.
As
back
always,
to the deep ball from Fields.
Yeah. Practice the is other perfect guy. For Mitch Trubisky, this time in Buffalo.
Who wrote the story?
Morrissey.
Yeah, I whatever. If you look at what Fields did at Ohio State, the one thing that stands out above everything else, which there's a lot to like, was his accuracy on throwing the deep ball, like better than anybody in all of college football.
The Pro Football Focus thing that I referenced yesterday, I went back to look at it. He's the most accurate college football passer since 2014, according to Pro Football Focus.
Which is fantastic.
So
again, I think what he'll learn too as things progress and they get into these mandatory sessions when he's against this Bears defense and then into training camp, he's going to have to rewire himself a little bit because at the collegiate level, you could talk to some of the people that say he took a lot of sacks because he always was waiting for the play to open up because he had so much confidence, A, in his arm and B, in the speed of the Ohio State receivers that the big plays were going to be there. At the NFL level, sometimes it's okay to take the check down. And that deep ball may be there, but there are moments when you also just say, hey, you know what? The safeties are dropping off. I'm going to throw the intermediate route. And that's just a learning process for him.
Another significant injury for the White Sox. They've endured a lot. We'll get to some baseball. And the party is returning to Wrigley tomorrow.
Oh boy.
We'll get into Chicago baseball coming up next.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
White Sox lost last night. It was the exact opposite thing that happened in game one of this series.
That's a bad loss.
Same game. It was nearly the same game as the night before where, you know, the Blue Jays were sort of in control of that first game. The White Sox were doing enough to hang around.
My memory sucks. Were the Blue Jays kicking it around the way the Sox were last night? I mean, they kicked it around the park.
Yes, Bichette had a bad throw. I thought it was virtually identical games. I mean, to the starts by both pitchers. Lance Lynn had a great start last night. He was MFing people coming off the mound. Did you see that?
I did. I had no problem with them moving on from him after seven great innings.
I heard Carmen bring this up. I'm glad he did.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we've pointed out La Russa issues. 95 pitches, a lot of miles on the arm. You need him good down the stretch.
And
he had an injury.
As Carmen also pointed out, the Blue Jays hit right-handed pitching better than they hit left-handed pitching. And Bummer just got a bad deal.
Right.
Based on all the things that transpired. I got a bad deal because I also had the Sox and three-team parlay, and the first two legs of the parlay came through.
Oh, really?
And I'm thinking, I'm sitting chilly at 2-1 going into the eighth inning with his bullpen.
Did you think about, like, hedging it all with the other side there?
It was a $10 parlay.
I know, but how much could you have made?
$45.
So maybe you bet the Blue Jays there for $5 when they're down with the odds, then at least you get your bet back.
Or I can just sit on my fat ass on my couch with a beer propped up on my gut and watch the Sox close this thing out at home.
And they
instead, they puked on themselves. I peed myself and I lost money.
You peed yourself over the Sox coughing up the game? Yeah, if La Russa brings him back at 90 to start an inning at 95 pitches coming off the DL a month ago, I'm not a fan of that. I was a fan of what they did, even though, again, process. It was a good process. It didn't work out.
Yeah, that was not a Tony La Russa problem last night.
No, not at all.
Out today. Tough loss, though. I mean, that was just an ugly loss.
And Nick Madrigal's lost, and I know you got the who covers our injuries there.
Yeah, yeah. Your injury update on your guy, Nick Madrigal, brought to you by Rush University System for Health. Rush has been providing excellent care to patients throughout the pandemic. There is no need to delay health visits. They offer care in safe environments or virtually. Learn more at rush.edu. Maybe you can give some soft tissue massaging to Nick.
In his Toyota, by the way. Yes.
Oh, you want to lay down the back of the...
A lot of room in the RAV4.
Give some soft tissue, some hammy, some hamstrings.
Nikki, two strikes. Sylvie's here.
That's gross. Hey, girl.
What do you mean?
Listen, to be honest with you, as bad as the injury, I heard Stoney say his concern was that it was going to be an Achilles, and I couldn't tell what it was.
Right.
But if you were going to gauge between hamstring and something more severe, a hamstring is... As bad as it is what you want.
It's sort of the same feeling you had for Kopech, right?
Because yes. I thought Kopech blew his knee out.
A lot of guys here in the station thought that it could have been his knee.
When I saw him go down, I let out an audible, oh, no.
And then to hear that it's a hamstring and it'll be back. Nikki Two Strikes will be back. They've just endured a ton of injuries. Now, we've said the reason why they're as great as they are is their pitching staff.
Yeah.
And they still have offensive firepower. But as long as they continue to throw out a good starter after good starter, this team should continue to win.
I would think so. I would think so.
Now, Abdallah, you have some questions about their strength of schedule, don't you?
Yeah,
Those are fair statements.
They're not really questions. They're more statements. Like, I went through, and did the quick math before the show started, this morning, and I sent it to you guys, and I'm filling as I try
good
to
job,
pull up
mathematician.
The as I
well
try
done.
To do the yeah. stats here. They're 27-11 against teams with a losing record, and 10-13 against teams with a winning record. They've only beaten one team in a series, I believe, with a winning record. So now, or not in a series, but they have a winning record against them. So right now, if they win tonight against the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays they have a winning record, so that would
be a series win against a team with an above 500 record.
Yeah, the other team, Cleveland?
If you go through it, I mean, they tied with Boston. They're 2-2 against Boston. They're 1-1 against.
They're
5-6 against Cleveland.
Yeah, no, okay. St. Louis was the team. They took 2-3 from St. Louis.
Yeah, they're 2-1 against the Cardinals.
Yes.
So right now, if they win tonight, they'd be 2-1 against the Blue Jays, a team with a winning record.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's not the overall determining issue. You can only play the teams that are on your schedule. You don't apologize for beating the crap out of the Tigers and other teams. But you also do take something from how they perform against better teams. It's what I have been most impressed about the Cubs.
Well, and my problem is this, and people are saying, oh, you can only play the teams in front of you, and if you're playing bad teams, all
true.
That kind of stuff, and that's a bad argument. They're already killing me in the chat. It's fine. I get that. But when I'm looking at this team... As an ALCS contender, as a World Series contender, when you're throwing the ball all over the yard, when you can't get anybody, when your bullpen can't get anybody out against good teams, that's how I measure it.
I'm not measuring
them against the Tigers.
Right.
That's not what I care about. They're going to win this division. That's not the issue.
These are separate conversations.
Yes.
Yes. You beat bad teams. There's no... I'm not going to apologize
don't penalize
for beating
them
by,
for
no,
that.
No, not
but
at
I
all.
But I also want to measure you against who you'll face in the postseason, and I want to see them play better against those teams.
Yeah, because when they have to face these teams in October, that's I'm going to look back at these games and be like, well, look what they did against teams with a winning record.
You know who they don't get credit for beating, though, that I'm going to give them credit for beating? They have a miserable record. Minnesota Twins... Remember, were predicted to be a division contender. They were a really good team last year. And this is a similar situation the Cubs are in with the Cardinals this weekend. But when remember, Chuck was worried about the Twins. And they went out and they kicked the Twins' ass.
They beat them five out of six times.
Five out of six times. But that goes down as beating a losing team because they're so bad. But again... I give them credit for what they did in the two series against the Twins,
except the
3-0 count.
They're still a 24-37 team.
Yeah, that's one more team.
Yeah,
like they've still only beaten one team with a winning record.
Now, the Angels are 2-under. The Mariners are 1-under. Those are teams they've handled. Again, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I don't get nuts over beating bad teams because I get mad when my team loses to bad teams. You know what I mean? Like, it could be worse, but I know what you're saying. And I want to bring up the Cardinals. The Cardinals are coming in town. They're going to be 40,000 fans at Wrigley Field, the party back. And I want to see something against these Cards. Plus, Carmen DeFalco went after me big time today. You'll hear that coming up in 2 short minutes.